This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. Please take a moment and pause this podcast right now and share it with somebody who you would think would enjoy the same topic, whether it's a family member, friend, coworker. I would really appreciate it. Please go to covertnerd.net for all the previous episodes and the different ways that you can get in touch with me. And without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up. We have Tim back here for more nerdy information. And today we're going to talk about the Star Wars Phase 1 High Republic. And so Tim has read pretty much all of it, right, Tim?
Yeah, I've read most of Phase 1. I've read they call them adult novels, which sounds weird. But I've read like the three main novels. I've read the young adult novels, and then I haven't read all of the middle grade. And they're all important. They're all really fun. It's made me understand kind of publishing and all that jazz as well, which is really cool. But I read all the comics that tie in, and we can jump into that in a little bit. But all of the books, all of the comics are telling unique stories too, which is really cool. Except for there's children's picture books that retell some of the stuff from the novels, but everything else is its own unique bit of the story.
It's all new. Mm-hmm. So, I guess if you're listening to this, you're probably interested in it, but I guess for those few people that maybe aren't familiar, give us the 2-minute summary of what is this Phase 1 High Republic publication that they're doing.
So in a nutshell, the High Republic, it's Star Wars, but it's set like 200 years before Episode 1, I believe. And what we're seeing is the Republic at the height of its power. And that means we're also seeing the Jedi at the height of their power. So when we see, if you think about the Star Wars movies with like Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, that's actually now been branded as the beginning of the fall of the Jedi. Which is kind of cool. So when we see the movies, the Jedi that we see in the prequels that ended up getting taken out by Order 66, that's the Jedi at literally their weakest. When the Jedi have fallen, Palpatine had done something with the dark side and had masked the presence of the dark side from the Jedi. And the Jedi, in my opinion, are a little bit corrupt. We've talked about that before. I think I'm not a fan of the Jedi Order. I like individual Jedi knights and masters, but the Jedi Order, as we see it in the movies, is completely messed up and twisted and not what it ought to have been. So what we're seeing in the High Republic is what was the Jedi Order like before it was corrupted? And the idea of the High Republic is they're giving it to us in phases. Phase 1 is what you and I are talking about today. Phase 2 has just started. There's only a couple of books out. And that is actually set 100 years before Phase 1. And I'll get into why that is in a little bit later. And then Phase 3, which I think will be next year, maybe late next year, that's basically going to be the sequel to Phase 1, where Phase 1 sets up the world. Phase 2 is giving us background. Phase 3 is the execution. That's where, the big culmination of everything that started in Light of the Jedi comes to a head. Light of the Jedi being the first book in that series. But it's just like a fun recontextualization of everything that you know about the Force and Jedi. And it's just really, really cool. They go into why, what it means to have connections. That's like a really big theme in Phase 1 is because we know Anakin is not supposed to have a relationship with Padme, right? We know that from the movies, and they have to keep everything hush, hush, and quiet. In the High Republic, relationships happen and connections happen, and while there are rules, they're more seen as a list of guidelines to help you.
Recommendations.
Yeah, instead of like hard and fast things, like this is what a good Jedi would do this. If you don't do this, it doesn't mean you're a bad Jedi. It just means that you're not top tier.
Backing up a little bit on Phantom Menace, is it Mace Windu that mentions something about they can't see the future or something like that?
It's become clouded.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that's part of the decline that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. In the comics for the High Republic, they actually have a timeline. That's something that we don't see outside of the comics really is the restructured timeline. Nothing's changed, but it's more been defined. So yeah. the High Republic is, you know, 200 years at this point with phase three, 300 years, but it's a couple hundred years before the Phantom Menace, and the Phantom Menace brought about the fall of the Jedi. And that kind of encompasses the prequels and the Clone Wars is the era they're calling the fall of the Jedi. We've got Reign of the Empire, which is that weird subsection in between the prequels and the original trilogy, which is like the Bad Batch, Solo, Star Wars Story, and the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. And then they're saying the Age of Rebellion is Rebels, Andor, Rogue One, and then the original trilogy. Moving into the New Republic, which is the Book of Boba Fett and the Mandalorian, giving way to Rise of the First Order, which starts with Resistance and then has the sequel trilogy.
Yeah. Okay. This High Republic, so back to that, we're talking about the, like you said, about 200 years before Phantom Menace, and they've got several books. I've read Light of the Jedi, but I think you said you've read all of the, like I said, adult novels.
Yeah, they call them adult novels, which just sounds weird.
Yeah, but they're just trying to distinguish between adult, young adult, and mid-grade.
Marketed towards adults, yeah,
middle, because they have these distinctions. You can see it, the novels, the young adult novels, and then middle grade novels, and then mm-hmm. you know, young readers and whatnot,
early readers, so, and all that. Yeah.
Run us through, I guess, your opinion or some of the fun story arcs on this phase one that you've read so far in the novels.
So, Light of the Jedi, the book that you've read, is one of my favorite novels of all time. Not one of my favorite Star Wars novels. It's one of my favorite books.
Really? Why is that?
Grabbed me in a way that no other book has in a while. Like, my favorite book of all time, I know we've talked about before, is The Gunslinger by Stephen King.
One of the reasons
that book resonates with me is that when you start it, or at least for me, I can't put it down and I need to turn the page and I need to find out what happens. In Light of the Jedi, and there's going to be some light spoilers, but this is...
Oh, yeah. We should let everybody know. Yeah.
You need to, if you want to start the High Republic, and you really, really should, you really want to start with Light of the Jedi. It requires no prior knowledge, even if you've never seen a Star Wars movie in your life. You can start with this, and it's fine. Even if you're, like, the biggest Star Wars fan, and you've never touched a High Republic book, your knowledge of Star Wars will not help you. And that's really cool. I like that a lot. But Light of the Jedi starts with a buildup to what they're calling the Great Disaster. And we don't know what the Great Disaster is, but something's happening. There's a countdown for the first, like, 100 pages. And at the end of chapter one, you're introduced to a whole ship of people. And by the end of the first chapter, people that you're already feeling a kinship towards or affection for are already dead. And the first 100 pages of Light of the Jedi were so captivating to me. I think I read it in an evening, the first 100 pages itself, but I just could not put it down. And once the great disaster happens, it's completely unthinkable. It just, the amount of carnage that happens basically on accident is so compelling and devastating. And one thing that happened, like, it's so hard to describe what the great disaster is without getting technical. There's a problem in hyperspace. There's like a collision in hyperspace, and then like all of the pieces from that collision fly out of hyperspace randomly. And most of the pieces of the debris happen in the, I want to say, the Hetzel system. It's been a minute since I've read it. But the Jedi are super late to save everybody. But when they show up, they're led by a woman named Avar Chris. And I love her. She's great. She's one of the best characters. You get to see in this moment of tragedy and in the early stages of this book, the Jedi working together and communicating. It goes into this weird detail about how all of the Jedi access the Force differently. Like, for Avar Chris, she recognizes the Force as like a song.
Yeah, sound.
Like this. Well, it's specifically like she calls it the song of the
musical notes. Yeah.
Yeah, and everybody has their own piece to play in this grand song of the Force, and she can hear everyone's individual notes or music or whatever, and she can manipulate it and change it. I can't remember. The other two main Jedi are Stellan Geos and Elzar Mann, and the three of them grew up together. Elzar Mann is kind of the de facto main character of the books. It doesn't start that way, but he very much ends up being the kind of the main focus by the end. One of them, and I think it's Elzar, I could be wrong, I apologize for not knowing this offhand, but one of them sees the Force as waves, like ocean waves or whatever, and when he's using the Force, he's moving these like ebbs and flows of water, and some other Jedi see like raging fire, and others have like wind, and it's just like it's just how the Jedi perceive the Force, whereas in the movies and in the traditional media we've had, it's an energy field that they manipulate or are a part of. And that's no less true in the High Republic, but just the way that the Jedi are in tune with the Force in a way that we've never seen makes it kind of beautiful in a weird, nerdy way.
And it shows how far they've, quote unquote, fallen.
The way that the Force is utilized and the way that Jedi are shown in specifically the first novel is so interesting to me. And I just really kind of dig it. As you go through the book, it's, again, Light of the Jedi, which again, I'm just kind of sticking with that one for right now because I absolutely love it. We get to kind of see that the Jedi are treated a little bit like cowboys. In the movies, we know Tatooine. Right. That's where Luke Skywalker's from. That's where a lot of the movies take place. Tatooine's located on the outer rim of the known galaxy, basically. The Jedi in the High Republic, again, a couple hundred years before Episode One, they're scouting the hyperspace lanes. They're building the freeway to the small outposts in the middle of nowhere. And so we see the Jedi acting like, you know, like Clint Eastwood in a cowboy movie, and he strolls into the small town and takes care of the bad guys and then strolls on back out. And there's something about that I really, really enjoy. The crux of Phase One as a whole, like the sun around which Phase One rotates, is they're building a space station called Starlight Beacon. And Starlight Beacon is intended to be like, think of like the Death Star, but benevolent. And the idea is this space station will be the first of many, and it can go from planet to planet and provide resources to people in need. It serves as a literal communications beacon. So that people on the outer rim can communicate to people in the mid rim or the central planets. It's this grand gesture that shows that the Jedi are one with the Republic. One of the main catchphrases of the High Republic Phase One is, "We are all the Republic." Chancellor Lena So is the figurehead in charge of the Republic itself. They never call it the High Republic while it's in there. That's just kind of looking back on it. We can recognize that this was the high era of the Republic, but she's the leader of the Republic, and the Starlight Beacon is the beginning of what she's calling her great works, and it symbolizes her commitment to moving forward with the Jedi and the Jedi's commitment for working with the Republic, and it's this grand symbiosis of power and benevolence. And underneath the surface, just off to the side, we have the rise of terrorists. Seems like a harsh word, but I don't know if there's a better descriptor for them. But we see the rise of the Nihil, and they're led by a man named Marcion Roe. I've heard people say Marcion. I've listened to the audiobooks and they say Marcion, and I'm going to go with that until somebody tells me I'm wrong and can back it up with evidence. But I'm going to go with Marcion Roe. He's the figurehead. He's got three lieutenants underneath him, and they're called Tempest Runners. And the Tempest Runners are in charge of their basically like little cells of terrorists, more or less. And they do body modification, so they'll like file down their teeth. They all wear masks. Their attacks are usually foreshadowed by like gas. Kind of like in episode one when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are in that room and the gas comes out. That's kind of how the Nihil signify that they're attacking. And then they'll all wear painted gas masks and stuff, so they look horrific when you're under the influence of whatever gas they're pumping in. And at first, in Light of the Jedi, they're more opportunistic than sadistic. There are sadistic undertones. They don't operate benevolently at all. Like they're horrible ruffians. But by the time we go through Rising Storm and Fallen Star, they go from being opportunistic ruffians to scary villains. By the time the three main entries of the High Republic Phase One are finished, Marcion Roe goes from being kind of a laughingstock to one of the scariest villains in Star Wars. I just absolutely was floored by seeing where he's at the beginning of Light of the Jedi and seeing where he is at the end. So much so that canonically, the last piece of Phase One fiction is a comic called Eye of the Storm. It's a two-part special written by Charles Soule, who wrote Light of the Jedi and was one of the main architects. But it's a two-part thing that shows the origin of Marcion Roe and literally ends, again, canonically, the most recent thing that we've seen is from this Marcion Roe comic. And just watching him go from pathetic to scary is insanely, insanely amazing.
That's an interesting transformation, yeah, with one character. Well, then they also use what's called, I think, is it the path? That's how they travel through hyperspace.
They use the paths that are set up by a Santeca, I believe.
Just describe the path, how that works for those that may not know what that works. I was reading up on it, so I kind of have an idea, but I don't know if you have a different take. I think it's what I've described is that there's different. They talk about it in Star Wars canon that they have the hyperspace works. You can go from point A to point B, but only on certain quote unquote roads. And some of them are dead ends, but some of them actually go to certain places.
Remember how I was talking about how the Jedi, part of their job is to help map out the hyperspace
things? Yes, yeah.
One of the reasons that Marcion Roe is in charge of the Nihil is because he has access to the paths. And the paths, nobody knows on the surface how he has these, but he's got an inside track on how to get from point A to point B, bypassing known routes and going, like, instead of going from A, B, C, D, E, he can go from A to E.
Yes. Yeah, he's got a shortcut.
It's got a shortcut, basically, yes. And he gets these from a woman who is tapped into the Force somehow. We don't have too much information. I can't remember her first name to save my life, but her last name is Santeca. The reason that name is important is if you've saw The Force Awakens, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At the very beginning, Poe is going in to save that old guy. That old guy is Lor San Tekka. And so he is a descendant of the woman who has access to the paths. And Marcion Roe.
What a cool little gem.
Oh, yeah. Marcion Roe is basically using her. Nobody knows he's using her. And he's like, I have these amazing paths that nobody else has access to. And every time he uses them, they work. Unfortunately, he has to torture this poor lady to get them. And she is basically, she's not brain dead, but she's darn close.
She's alive by machine.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. One of the things, just as a quick aside, in phase two, I'm really slow on my phase two stuff, but that's set 100 years beforehand, and we're actually getting information on some relative of Marcion Row, and we're also seeing some Santecas, which is really, really neat. Also in the comics currently, like in the comics set during the original trilogy, they introduced a woman named Sana Staros. She was first introduced as like the wife of Han Solo because they ran a grift at one point, which is cool. But her ancestors actually play a huge role in the High Republic as well. And it's just kind of neat where, like, if you knew who those character names were, you kind of get a little bit of an insight when you're reading these books. But having that knowledge isn't going to make these books better, and not having that knowledge isn't going to take anything away from you. It's kind of a fun little thing. But the paths are generated by the Santeca lady. Marcion takes them and uses his ability to do like surgical guerrilla strikes on the Republic as a way to amass power and make himself more of a threat.
Yeah, because I think by using the path, if I understand it correctly, they can get to destinations faster than expected. So yeah. The High Republic doesn't, they're like, how do they get in here so quickly?
Yeah, it's very much a hit and run kind of situation. It's real, and again, it goes from being opportunistic and ruthless to being literally just vile and awful.
Well, they explore two cool things, I think, in this book is, what if a ship does tear apart in hyperspace? Where do the pieces come out? Because if you think about it, once the hyperdrive's turned off, it's just going to stop, but you don't know where the parts are going to come out at. And two, the hyperspace roads, you know, are there other roads to get different certain places at different ways? So that's kind of a cool thing that they're pulling from existing ideas.
Yeah, and an object in motion tends to stay in motion. And so there's no breaks. And so those pieces are going to go somewhere. And it's actually really, really cool. It's cool. Like tens of hundreds of people, hundreds of thousands of people die, but it's really cool. I like
it. Well, like I said, it's taking something that could likely happen and probably did happen, and it explains the catastrophic effects of hyperspace. You know, they talk about the danger, or they allude to the dangers of hyperspace. This could be one of them.
No, absolutely. And they don't know. We've never thought about hyperspace from the original movies. It's just that's how you get from place to place. You got the stream of stars, and you're in a cool blue tunnel, and then you come out of it. And just knowing that that there's consequences to travel is something that's only been touched on in some of the canon novels. And it's kind of neat.
Yeah, I like that.
From the Jedi side of things, one of the coolest characters they introduce in Light of the Jedi is a green Twi'lek, I'm not sure how you want to say it, but his name's Loden Greatstorm. And his Padawan is a gentleman by the name of Bel Zedifar. And Bel Zedifar is kind of your emotional crux in the first book. And he has nothing but the utmost respect for Loden. And Loden is basically like, you're going to be like, you're done being my Padawan. I've got nothing left to teach you. As soon as we're done with this mission, I'm going to go ahead and put to the council that you need to be made a Jedi Knight. By the end of the book, by the end of Light of the Jedi, Loden is kidnapped by the Nihil, and Bel sees it as just this huge failure. And one of the I alluded to earlier, the Nihil's hierarchy is kind of broken into storm nomenclature. So you have the eyes in charge of it, and then you've got Tempest Runners and all of that. So they kidnap Loden Greatstorm because they want secrets of the Jedi, and they think it's perfect because his name is Storm, all of that jazz. So the second book is called The Rising Storm, and part of that is due to the Nihil, and specifically Marcion, recognizing what power they have, and they spend the entire book torturing poor Loden It is unfortunate. Bell refuses to become a Jedi Knight because of his failure, so he ends up getting another master. I think it's Indira Stokes, and I like her a lot. She's pretty cool. The second book, though, The Rising Storm, introduces one of my very favorite characters, and that's Ty Yorick. Ty Yorick, she used to be a Jedi, and she quit the Order to be a monster hunter. And it's really, really cool. She has a very small role to play in the novel, ultimately, but IDW put out a mini series under the High Republic Adventures line called The Monster at Temple Peak. And it's basically Ty Yorick hunting monsters.
Wow. It's like The Witcher in Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, kind of. I just like it a lot. She was very disillusioned by the Order. She's got a lightsaber. She's super cool.
Very much like Ahsoka.
Yes, except Ahsoka is genuinely a good person and is looking out for other people. Ty Yorick, she's kind of out for herself, and she doesn't have the same kind of a moral compass. So I think she's a little bit more like The Witcher than Ahsoka, which is fun because I don't want another Ahsoka. I love True. Ahsoka. And so to have Ty also exist is super duper fun. And I really just enjoy that character. She had a little bit of an appearance in the third book.
Fallen
Star. I don't
Star.
Remember. Yeah, Fallen Star. I don't remember if she had any horrible fate or not. So we could still see her in phase three when that comes around.
Sure, sure.
But she was easily my favorite Jedi. If she's my favorite Force user, okay. I suppose. I loved her. I loved her to pieces. Out of the main Jedi, Elzar Mann is absolutely the point of view character that I related to the most. I just really liked him. He ended up having a crush on Avar Chris. They grew up as Padawans together. It's heavily implied that they're kind of in love with each other. They've thought about quitting the Order and running off together. Through everything that happens in the three main books, Elzar Mann has to let himself accept the dark side a little bit because of what happens to Loden Greatstorm and how he tries to save some of his fellow Jedi. He slips into the dark side, and it's something that he genuinely struggles with. It's really, really cool, and a lot of book three is him trying very, very hard. He's working with Orla Jireni, and he's trying very, very hard to reconcile his flirtation with the dark side, and what does that mean to be a Jedi, and ultimately is his attraction to Avar Chris antithetical to being a Jedi? Is that allowing him to go to the dark side? That investigation into attachments, like we were talking about before, it very much comes to a head in his story. It's really, really fascinating, really, really engaging. Stellan Geos, who's part of that trilogy of characters, he ends up kind of being in charge of the Jedi for more or less. Like, Avar Chris is that figurehead by the end of the first book. And in the second book and in the main Marvel comics, we actually see her fall from that position of power and become obsessed with trying to catch who she thinks is a Twi'lek named Lorna D. She becomes obsessed with catching Lorna D to the point that she kind of rejects her duty as the person in charge of Starlight Beacon. She goes off on her own to catch these Nihil, and she abandons her post. And so her old friend Stellan Geos has to take over as the I want to say Chancellor. That's not correct. Is very, very close. But just being in charge of Starlight Beacon, and that actually causes a rift between them. And then he always knew that Elzar and her had a connection, and so he's a little bit upset over that with their specific thing. It's very intricate in a way that like movies and TV shows can't really get. And I really, really enjoy it.
So you got the three the three novels there that they put out. So you mentioned, and I always thought this was fascinating, that the comics, being that Marvel owns or Disney owns Star Wars now and they own Marvel, that they outsourced some of the comics to IDW?
They did. IDW, up until last year, was publishing Star Wars Adventures, which was an all-ages take on Star Wars. They're all canon, which is interesting. But that also included, like, there was Star Wars Adventures and then Star Wars The High Republic Adventures. And then within that, we got things like The Monster at Temple Peak, which was a four-issue miniseries that was under Star Wars Adventures. And then last year, the Adventures went from IDW back to Dark Horse. So Dark Horse is now publishing Star Wars again.
I saw that again.
But the main books are still put out by Marvel. So like Star Wars, Darth Vader, Bounty Hunters, and then the High Republic are like, there's other mini series for sure, but like you've got the three tentpole books. Oh, I guess, and Dr. Aphra. So four major tentpole books and then the High Republic main book. And then they just started putting out The High Republic, The Blade, which is, again, set during phase two. But we're actually seeing one of the Jedi who we see give his life in the third book. We're actually seeing what made him awesome 100 years ago, which is really kind of fun.
Phase one, of course, is already out. And then you said phase two, they're going back, which is kind of odd. But I guess talk about phase two so far.
So in phase one, Loden Great Storm is actually killed at the end of book two because Marcion Roe uses something. We don't know what it is. It's a thing and he uses it. And that completely cuts Loden off from the Force. It kills him, sucks out his energy, and he turns to like ash, like completely gray ash, and then just floats away in the wind. In the third book, Fallen Star, the Fallen Star is Starlight Beacon. There are Nihil who are attacking Starlight Beacon. They infiltrate and they set up a bomb so that it breaks in half. They also smuggle in two creatures. We think they might be creatures that are the essence of whatever it is that he used to kill Loden is now loose on Starlight Beacon, killing Jedi. And it's terrifying. What I believe, or what I understand phase two to be, is we're getting not only the origin of the Nihil, the background of the Roe family, but we're also going to see whatever it is this weapon is, because the weapon was actually introduced in the Marvel comics and then offhandedly mentioned as the catalyst that killed Loden Greatstorm. And then is this unseen, like when Jedi look at it, they can't see it. They see something else. And it doesn't seem like non-Jedi can actually perceive it. And I don't know. Like I'm very unclear, because when our point of view characters experience it, it's also very unclear. The way I believe this is going to work is phase two is going to explain the weapon that's being used. And then phase three, we're going to see Avar Kriss and the stragglers, because book three, there is just a lot of death. But I think phase three, I think we're going to see the stragglers join together and try to overcome this weapon. Also, there's a show that they're working on for Disney Plus, and it's called The Acolyte. All we know about The Acolyte is it is supposed to be the end of the High Republic. And we know that the High Republic ends going into the fall of the Jedi. My theory is the Acolyte is either Palpatine or Plagueis, who was Palpatine's master.
Palpatine's master, yes.
And I also have kind of some thoughts that Marcion Roe might be Plagueis. But really? I don't That's just speculation on my part.
I like that. Let's speculate on that.
I don't need it to be that, but I would. Because he wears a mask all the time. He's a little bit disfigured. He's got like gray features. Basically, at this point, the Jedi believe that the Sith are gone because there just were no Sith until we see Darth Maul in Episode One.
That's what they say in the movie, wasn't it? There hasn't been a Sith for 1,000 years or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So as far as the Jedi know, the Sith don't exist. We haven't seen any elements of the dark side specifically, except for these forces of nature that are just killing Jedi.
Marcion Roe has some sort of connection to Plagueis. They just haven't revealed it, maybe.
Yeah, we just don't know. We don't know what it is.
Or maybe not at all. I don't know.
or maybe nothing. And he doesn't have to at all. But just my theory is that the Acolyte, the titular Acolyte from the TV show, may be Palpatine. Because
or Darth Plagueis, I guess, if you're looking at timeline.
Yeah. There's also a High Republic video game they're working on. And when they released the teaser trailer for it, I was like, this doesn't seem like the High Republic at all to me. And then I started reading Phase 2 and I was like, oh, I get it. So the video game they're putting out very much looks like it's tying into themes that have been in what little I've read from Phase 2, which is kind of cool.
Well, because Phase 2, I think they've got High Republic Convergence is out for the novels.
Yeah, there's also...
But the comic book, it looks like there's High Republic comic book, High Republic The Blade.
The Blade and then High Republic Adventures.
A decent amount out, but it looks like the novel Cataclysm comes out in April of 23.
Yep. I'm looking at these right now. I have Convergence, but they have said that the place to start is with the young adult book Path of Deceit, which I'm about halfway through. They said that actually works as a very good introduction to Phase 2 before you read Convergence. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm literally about halfway through it.
There's audio drama coming out February 14th, The Battle of Jeddah.
We saw the ruins of Jeddah in Rogue One. That was where the Death Star like shot up the desert.
Yeah, yeah. That's Jeddah. Nice. So
that was Jeddah. Yeah,
they're going back to that because there was a Jedi temple there or something like that, I assume. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, all these cool things they just kind of pull from.
Yeah, and again, you don't need to know that, but like, if you read it or you listen to the Battle of Jeddah and then you watch Rogue One and you're like, oh, wait, hold on. I know what this is. Because that's where Chirrut and Baze are. They're from Jeddah, which is super cool. There's been like no Skywalkers running around. There's not been any Kenobi.
Do you think they did that on purpose, though, right? I mean,
I hope so.
Fans love the Skywalkers, but I think at some point you have to kind of look, we're going to kind of pivot a little bit from all of that.
I think it was very deliberate. Like when the names you recognize are Staros and Santeca, like that's something that's like deep cuts for the generic Star Wars fan. Like, so somebody who's only seen the movies, they're not going to remember that the guy that Poe tried to rescue and completely failed at the beginning of The Force Awakens, that his name was Lor Santeca. Like, they're not going to care. And that's fine. They don't need to. It's not pivotal information. But I just always thought that was kind of neat.
What out of all of these, though, what's the best story arc? Or do you just like this overall story arc that they're doing with the Nihil and all that stuff?
I'm very biased because I think Light of the Jedi, again, is one of the best books I've ever read. But there is... Do you have a list of the books with you?
Yeah. Which one are you looking for?
What's the name of the first young adult novel? Is it Out of the Darkness?
In Phase 1?
Yeah.
Young adult novel. Let's see. Into the Dark.
Into the Dark.
Out of the Shadows was the second one.
Into the Dark. Okay. I think one of my favorite standalone stories is the first young adult novel from Phase 1. It's called Into the Dark, and it's basically about killer plants on a space station. It's very, very weird. You get to see a young Jedi dealing with trying to, like, I think she's the youngest Jedi Knight in history at that point, and she's learning to deal with the dark side. She's completely cut off of everybody else. It has real like Alien vibes to it, like the movie Alien. But that book introduces one of my other favorite characters who might be my very favorite character in the High Republic. And that is Geode. And Geode is a rock. He is a literal rock.
Hence his name.
Yes. Well, and his name's not really Geode. That's just how we say his name. If you can't say his name if you have a mouth, which is great. But one of the best things is you'll have he's a navigator on a ship called the Vessel, which is it just keeps getting better because the vessel's name is the Vessel. Somebody will be sitting on the bridge talking to Geode, and they'll be like, "What do you think about this, Geode?" And like they said, his silence spoke volumes. So he never actually speaks, and it's always talked about how he is just the most stoic person. He's also a ladies' man. They talk about how he can get any woman he wants. People will just turn around and he'll be there. Like somebody tries to break into the vessel, and they think it's completely empty, and they turn around and Geode is just there watching them, and they didn't hear him because he's very, very quiet.
He's a Jedi.
No, he's a rock. He's just a navigator. Yeah, he's just a rock. Yeah, his nickname is Geode because you can't say his name unless you don't have a mouth. That's from Claudia Gray, who wrote Into the Dark. And I just absolutely love it. It's complete and utter nonsense in like the way that I absolutely adore. Because Geode, I don't believe, would be a captivating character in a video game or in a cartoon or in a movie. He'd be a throwaway gag. And for some reason, he's one of the most captivating characters because Claudia Gray has written him the most. He's appeared in other books by other writers, but the way Claudia Gray writes him is like there's this weird pathos for it. And we're talking about a slab of rock, and he doesn't speak. We never see him move. We never hear him speak. And all of his thoughts are kind of projected onto him by how other people perceive him. And it's just this weird, it's like the ultimate silent protagonist. And it's just like, it's so hard to define what makes this character cool because he is a rock. But it's really, really fun. And I think ultimately that boils down to like, what I like about the High Republic is that it released itself from the constraints of canon, in that like it counts, like all of this stuff did count, like Luke Skywalker would pick up a history book and read about Starlight Beacon because that's actually something that happened in his world. But everything we know about Star Wars does not matter to the High Republic. It is just pure, unadulterated Star Wars from like a new point of view. It's yeah, go for it.
Done a good job with, it seems like, world building and cohesiveness, so one author can match another author. I think that shows that they've spent a lot of time really thinking about what are we going to do, where are we going to go, how are we going to get there.
Well, and there's been comics where like there is a murder. And there's a whole miniseries called Trail of Shadows that Marvel put out during Phase 1. And it's a Jedi and a detective trying to solve a murder. And that fits in with these weird zombie plant monsters. And that fits in with these guerrilla terrorists. And that fits in with this Jedi who quit the Order and is now a monster hunter. And that fits in with, there was the whole original High Republic Adventures that IDW put out is Yoda magic school busing younglings. He basically takes all of the younglings and he's like, "Hey, we're gonna bounce," and he puts them on a spaceship and just goes.
Awesome.
And it's just fun. There's like, no, we don't have to worry about, you know, oh, where's he gonna be on Tatooine when Boba Fett does the thing, because like, that's great, and it has its point, it has its place. This is letting me experience Star Wars without the constraint of the Skywalker baggage, honestly. It's everything that I love about Andor currently, like the Star Wars show Andor. It has ties to Rogue One for sure, but mostly it has nothing to do with Skywalkers. It doesn't have anything to do with Jedi. It's just pure unadulterated Star Wars fun until season two. When season two comes out, that's going to roll right into Rogue One, and it's going to be the most Star Wars thing that Star Wars has done. And I love that right now, because of the High Republic, because of Andor, because of the comics, because of the video games like Jedi Fallen Order and its sequel that's coming out soon, the limits on what Star Wars can or should be are gone. And I just really love that. Like, Star Wars Visions isn't canon, but we can tell these really cool anime-inspired stories within Star Wars. With the High Republic, we can play with our conceits and preconceived notions of what the Force is. With the TV shows, we can give characters that we don't get time to hang out with, like, more time to be interesting. Like, Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, that's a show that exists? Like, yeah. That's like, it's almost not fair that, like, we get to have these fun little things, and everybody might not like them, and everybody's not gonna like them. But the fact that we have the ability to judge what in Star Wars we enjoy and what in Star Wars we don't, like, Star Wars isn't just a movie that came out in 1977. Star Wars is just like this whole thing, and there's something in Star Wars for everybody. And what they're doing with the High Republic just completely blows me away. I'm just so incredibly impressed with.
Says a lot coming from you, because I know you've, in the past, you've read the old stuff from, say, the 90s, Timothy Zahn, you know, the Tales of the Jedi comic books, all that. I guess explain Shadows of the Empire, I guess touch on that, the differences, good, bad, or otherwise, from what you grew up with to what's coming out now of the Star Wars stories.
Okay. So there was a lot of controversy when it happened, because when Disney got Star Wars, they jettisoned the expanded universe, and you and I have touched on this before.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, they were like, we want to make sure that when we put out new media, you don't have to have read hundreds of books that also, like, counteract each other and are just, like, nobody thought it was going to be what it was. And so what ended up happening is they jettisoned all of those books, which most of them you can still buy. They're just branded Star Wars Legends, because they didn't actually happen, quote unquote, in canon. But what we're seeing now is, with a more cohesive storytelling, like sequels, boy, I go on a tangent about how they did not pull the sequel trilogy together in a satisfying way. But overall, how they're unifying Star Wars as a cohesive storytelling unit now is really, really interesting. And what you have are authors like Charles Soule and people like Pablo Hidalgo, who are working behind the scenes, who, like, have a genuine love and respect for the goofy stories that you and I grew up with, right? Like, bit characters in Andor and bit characters in Obi-Wan Kenobi are getting called out and are, like, important. My favorite Jedi from the expanded universe was Quinlan Vos, who was in, like, 2-3 episodes maybe of Clone Wars, and he's in a novel, but I loved him in the expanded universe. That's where I fell in love with him. And he got, like, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi said his name in the TV show. And just, like, as a fan, that, like, meant something to me. And at Celebration last year, they heavily hinted that Dash Rendar, who was one of the main characters, he was the Han Solo stand-in during Shadows of the Empire. They've heavily hinted he's coming to canon. Like, without saying it, they've pretty much hinted that Dash Rendar's coming to canon.
Oh, man, that'd be cool. Just a good nod.
It's one of those things, too, where, like, new fans are going to have the ability to see these characters in, like, a really cool new light that makes sense within the canon. Like, you mentioned Timothy Zahn's books earlier. He's released two new Thrawn trilogies that are both within canon, But the so he has the Ascendancy trilogy, which is like Thrawn's origin. But from his main trilogy, the third book in that trilogy takes place during the final four episodes of Rebels. Like, that's when it takes place. And so now we had Ahsoka show up in The Mandalorian, and she's looking for Thrawn. And, like, what does that mean? And that wouldn't matter if we didn't fall in love with these silly little books back in the 90s. So I think there was initially a really big pushback from the fan community as a whole when the concept of jettisoning the expanded universe was put forth. But here we are, like a decade later. Has it been that long?
Dash Rendar is being talked about. I mean,
yeah, Dash Rendar is being talked about. We've got Death Troopers, like Death Troopers from the Dark Forces game.
Exactly.
Like those are like in canon. Like that's a thing that from we've the 90s. Seen.
Well, does that mean we're going to see Prince Caesar?
Here's the thing: we almost have in the comics. They've been dealing with Crimson Dawn. We're seeing. Oh gosh, I completely lost her name. The female lead from Solo. She came back in a big bad way in the comics, and right now they're almost finished with the gap between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi in the comics. And right now we're actually seeing Black Sun that Caesar was in charge of. Caesar may exist in canon. I am very behind in the comics, but I don't know if you can have Black Sun and not have Caesar. But we have seen Feline, his species have been seen, and they represent Black Sun. And I can't speak with any authority because I'm very, very behind. But if we have not yet seen Caesar, we're very, very close, and it's going to happen.
All those people, you know, 10 years ago, they're upset about this. You know, we're starting to get bits and pieces of that 90s universe pulled in. And the reason I think it might be happening is because Charles Soule and a lot of these people that are writing and in charge, they grew up on these books from the 90s.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Charles Soule said that his three favorite characters are Poe Dameron, Lor San Tekka, and Yaddle. And so he's gone out of his way to make sure that the San Tekkas are important. He's gone out of his way. He wrote the Poe Dameron comic for 25 issues, and that was so insanely good. Charles Soule, one of the best Star Wars writers we've ever had, and he said he has plans for Yaddle. And Yaddle was actually in the Tales of the Jedi animated series. So we're getting some Yaddle goodness. What I love about this is it's going to harken back to if people listen to the episode I was on with you where we talked about Transformers. One of my favorite things about Transformers is people my age who grew up just loving the cartoon and the idea of these robots that turn into cars are now like storytellers, and they're taking their passion for story, matching it with the stuff they loved as a kid, and are making phenomenally great stories out of like silly little robots that turn into cars. And we're seeing kind of the same thing right now in Star Wars, where just like these silly little space wizards are doing really cool things. And the best sci-fi, I've said it before, it's not my unique saying, I know that I definitely have stolen it over time, but the best sci-fi is a reflection of the times. And I think Star Wars as sci-fi shows us what we're looking for as an escape. I know a ton of people are going to say it's science fantasy, it's not science fiction, but like I agree with that. But I also think that right now, I can't imagine not having Star Wars, and the fact that I've got so much of it. Like, I'm just looking at one of my bookshelves right now, and I've got like so many just books I haven't even touched yet. And I'm so behind on my comics, and I'm so behind on like Bad Batch season 2 is out. I'm so behind on all of that. But what that means is I have so much Star Wars still like yet to get to. And that makes me really, really excited and super duper happy.
Yeah, and I always think back in the 90s, we were so excited to get all this ancillary books and comic books. And
Shadows of the Empire, their whole idea with that was to do everything but a movie. Like, it had a soundtrack, it had comics, it had a video game tie-in, it had a novel. I think last year, the soundtrack came out on vinyl. It had only ever been released on, like, CD and cassette. But sitting over with my records, I have the vinyl soundtrack for Shadows of the Empire.
That's great.
which is just, it's ridiculous. And I'm so very happy that just, like, a silly, nerdy, niche thing that would be, like, in, I'm not saying that Star Wars itself is a nerdy niche thing, because it's, you know, we've got a Disney theme park for it. It's some of the highest grossing movies of all time. But when I say nerdy and niche, it's like, you know, people like you and I who are reading the books and watching the cartoons and just who genuinely, like, Star Wars isn't just a movie I enjoy. It's like a thing that, like, genuinely all aspects of it bring me joy. And I think that just because fiction, like, the fact that fiction can do that on any level is really exciting to me and just, like, really, really cool.
And that's the thing, this whole new wave is nostalgic of the 90s, because we're getting this wave of ancillary Star Wars fun. I'll even call it fun, sure, just because it is fun. What would you say to some of the naysayers that, well, I like the 90s stuff, I don't know if I want to try this new High Republic thing?
If you don't want to try it, don't try it. I'm to the point where, like, I don't want to convince you anymore, not you specifically, Lee, but, like, there's people my age who are like, oh, Star Wars sucks ever since Disney took over. And that's just not true. It's objectively incorrect.
Watch Mandalorian. I mean,
Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, like, Star Wars Visions, any of it, like Clone Wars, like the last season of Clone Wars, like everything that's happening in Bad Batch, Andor's fantastic, the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. If somebody comes at me saying, I don't enjoy new Star Wars, why should I read the High Republic? It's because it's great. Like, objectively, like, I'm kind of tired of fighting with the people who just come at it from saying, like, oh, Star Wars sucks. Well, if you think it sucks, I can't help you. Like, it just objectively doesn't. And the only way you could ever be convinced would be to sit with a non-critical eye and just watch it or consume the media. And I think that's the best thing. If you come at anything, if it's Star Wars, if it's sports, if it's video games or board games or card games or you know, cars or what have you, anything at all, if you go into it deciding that you already don't like an aspect of it, I can't help you. That's something where, like, if you're apprehensive about it, don't do it. But if you're curious and you want to learn more, jump in the whole hog. If you, like, you know, if somebody was saying, I've been too hard on Star Wars, but I feel intimidated with all of this stuff, I don't want to have to watch 10,000 things to get into Boba Fett, that's when I would say, check out the High Republic. You don't need to know anything. You understand what the Force is. Go in with the High Republic. You don't need to know anything, but if you do know stuff, you get little bonuses.
It's available at your local library. If you want to listen to it, you can get it at your local library. You can rent, you know, you can borrow it. So if you don't want to spend any money,
use one of your 10,000 Audible credits that you haven't used.
Try it for free. If you don't like it, you're not out anything.
Nah, not at all. And, like, the worst that could happen is, like, just read the first 100 pages of Light of the Jedi, and if you hate it, like, I can't help you. That's the best I've got.
It's a good, interesting series. You can tell they've put a lot of work into this about making it cohesive. I get the impression that maybe in the 90s with the extra stuff, it was kind of just one-off. Hey, we'll give X author, you want to write a book about a story, here you go. And there's just no interconnectivity. So I think that's a big difference.
Yeah, there was a shell of that for a while. And then they ended up with, I think, the New Jedi Order. I think at that point, George Lucas actually was signing off on all of the books. That's like when Chewbacca died and they had a whole bunch of other stuff. I think at that point, they really were trying to pull all of the pieces together. But that is kind of, you know, I understand the frustration for the people that grew up with those books and felt betrayed when they were pushed off to the side. But I also don't know how you could have done it any other way.
This is very well managed now, though. I can tell.
Yeah, yeah. Those books could not have counted and then have us have a movie that acknowledges the hundreds of books that had come out. Like, it just wouldn't have worked.
That's why I think this one is, it was well managed. And so I think people that dip their toes into it will like it because it just makes sense. So they're connected, but they're not connected, I guess, for if you want to. Maybe you can read the novels and not know about the comics, or you can read the comics and not know about the novels.
If you want to read The High Republic, I would say start with Light of the Jedi, because that is a fantastic introduction to the time, like the timeline and where we're at. And phase one itself, the three main novels, The Light of the Jedi, Rising Storm, and Fallen Star, are telling the crux. Like, those are the movie trilogy, basically. So those are the backbone of everything else that happens. So, like, if you read Into the Dark, the young adult novel, you don't need to know what's happening, but those things are referenced. And what's interesting too is when you read the three main novels, people will show up who are from those young adult novels, and like, you have no clue for who they are. You're just like, I don't know who this Emery person is. I don't know who Geode is. I don't know who this person is. But they show up and they have something to do, and then they leave, and you're just like, I wonder what they did. And there's a whole book about it. You could just pick up any of the High Republic books and be good. But I would say you would be doing yourself a disservice to not at least start with Light of the Jedi. And if you like it, there's infinite possibilities for you to go from there. But I would say that's probably the best place to start. It's like with Star Wars. If you've never watched a Star Wars movie, start with the original.
Start with the original, yeah. Special edition, or, you know, they have all the different flavors you can make fun of.
But... Oh, man. I don't even get me started. I think the greatest sin George Lucas committed was not the special editions, but not keeping the original theatrical versions available. I think you make all the changes you want. You can do all the tweaks. You can make the Ewoks blink, whatever you want to do. But the original theatrical cuts, if those were available, I think people would be less upset at the changes that were made. Make changes to your story. Do whatever you want to your movie. Totally fine. But the biggest sin he committed was not keeping those theatrical cuts available.
I agree. That's a whole different episode.
No, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, hey, Tim, let's put a pin in this. I think it's been fun talking about this High Republic. I know you've been very positive about it. So I'm glad you picked this topic, because I like to talk to people about what they're passionate about. And you definitely are passionate about High Republic.
Oh, man, it's been really, really fun. I really like it.
Well, conclude this episode, and I'll include Tim's Twitter handle in the show notes. So if you want to rant at him, hit him up, let him know your thoughts. Thanks, Tim, again. And until next time, nerd it up.